Good morning, everybody. My name is Frances, and I'm excited to be here today because, as you can see by my shirt, step one, if you have friends who think all religions are the same, is to hypnotize them. So my message today is going to be on effective evangelism through hypnosis. So it's going to be very exciting. I'm just kidding. I hope I don't have to say I'm just kidding, but just to clarify, in case you're excited about that, my name is... Start again. My name is Frances, and I'm excited to be here today because this message is one that a few months ago when we were talking through who was going to be preaching the different messages, and I was assigned this one, I started to think about a lot of my friends and family believe that all religions are the same, and I started to think about many of the conversations that I've had over the years with them about this topic. And so I really started to, it was personal for me. But then it was made even more personal last week. Last Saturday afternoon, my husband and I were sitting at home watching something stupid on TV. And my best friend, who I've known for 25 years, called me 3 times in a row. And my phone was on silent, so I didn't hear it. And then she texted me after that. And when I finally saw my phone a couple of hours later, she had texted me and said, "France," because that's what she calls me, "France, Mom is dying." So I've known her for 25 years. And her mom wasn't just my best friend's mom. She was my Girl Scout leader when I was young. She was someone who babysat me before and after school. She was someone that used to bring me to church here when this was Irvington Baptist Church when I was a kid. Because I didn't grow up in a Christian home. My mom didn't come back to church until I was in high school. So she was the person who was an example of what it meant to be a Christian woman for me. So I asked my friend, "What do you need? Like, what can I do?" And she said, "I need a hug." And so I did what the only thing that I could do. I packed up my car, I packed up my husband, and we drove down to Bakersfield. He's like carry-on luggage, right? And we went down to Bakersfield, and we sat in the hotel room with my friend's mom for a couple days. Because she was at the very end of her life. And it was this really gut-wrenching experience. I have never done that before. I have never been with someone in the last days of their life. And so I learned some things, that hospital food isn't that bad. And, you know, in the waiting room, I read a copy of Field and Stream from 1999, which, if you've ever been in a hospital, that is also the case. So I learned how to hunt wild turkeys, which was very useful. But it was just this experience of waiting, and I'd have these moments when I was there of just thinking about life after death. Because the truth is, when you're around someone who's dying, and this is someone who is a very strong Christian, as I said, she brought me to church and she brought me to faith in Jesus. But you have these thoughts like, well, what if I'm wrong? What if this is too good to be true? What if when she dies, nothing happens? Or worse, something awful happens because we chose wrong. And then the other side of that, when I was sitting in the waiting room reading that magazine from 1999, this group of EMTs with an empty gurney walked slowly past the waiting room. And I jump up because that can't be good news. And I looked, and it wasn't my friend's mom, but it occurred to me that every time I'd walk to her room, I'd walk past perhaps 30 hospital rooms. And what about all the people in those rooms? What happens to them if something happened when they died and they didn't believe in Jesus? So this question of what about all religions? How are they the same? Are they the same? What about this faith thing is so important? And I was just reminded of that this past weekend. And when I think about all my friends and family, it's not just people. As Dwayne said in the welcome, there's actually, this is kind of an undercurrent in our culture that all religions are the same because we like things to be fair and we like things to be even, that everything is equally valid. So I want to show you a couple clips, because as I was just preparing for this message, I thought of some things that I'd seen and heard. And I just want to say as a disclaimer right now, I am not saying because we show it in church, go out and watch these movies or watch this TV show. So please do not send Dwayne letters saying Francis is saying watch The Family Guy. But when I show you these clips, the reason I show them is because they say something about what people mean when they say all religions are the same. So go ahead and take a look at these clips.
And Jesus, which religion should our family be?
601, they're all complete crap.
Thank you.
I entertained Frances in the front row. She's laughing pretty hard. So when I watch these, I show these two very different clips because the first one is saying all religions are the same and that they're all equally valid. You know, it doesn't matter what you have faith in. It just matters that you have faith. Just matters that you have that belief. That's what actually is important. And on the other side, what Jesus in cartoon form is saying to Peter is that they all are equally bad. So sometimes when people say all religions are the same, they mean they're all the same and that they all are wrong. They all are the opiate of the masses. They all are a crutch for people who are too weak to get by on life on their own. Or for people who have to believe in mythology and fairy tales. In fact, these are just a couple clips. I don't watch House, but I happened to be watching it, and he said something to the effect of, well, this guy is expecting an answer from someone who won't talk to him. How is he any different than millions of churchgoers? Just this week. And a couple weeks ago, I actually am a fan of Bones, she was talking about how it was okay to baptize her child because children need mythology in order to develop intellectually. So there's this undercurrent that you hear continually that all religions are the same. And so in thinking through my friends and family and the conversations that I have, I wanted to just share with you a little bit from my experience and a lot from the Bible as far as, well, how do we deal with this issue? And the first thing, it's a caution that I want to give you right now. And this is on your outline if you wanted to take notes. The caution is don't argue. It's not helpful to argue with somebody because I have never been in a position where I've had a deep conviction about something and someone effectively argued me out of it. Like I was blown away by their logic so much that I said I'm wrong. In fact, I hate saying I'm wrong. And nothing shows you that you're wrong more than getting married, as my husband has learned. I love you, babe. But when I got married, I'd realized like my husband does not speak up about things in general because he's very like go with the flow. And I'm like, I have an opinion about everything. But when he does speak up, it's usually because it's something that he's thought through very carefully, and he is right. That is recorded, so there you go. But when he speaks up, he's not argumentative or anything, but what happens is I hear what he says, and then I say, yeah, 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 grumble, grumble, grumble. And I walk away, and then I have the exact same conversation a couple days or a couple weeks later. Can you believe what Matt said to one of my girlfriends? And they say, well, have you ever considered, and then they say the exact same thing that he did. And I come back to him and say, my friends are so smart. I might even change my behavior. But it's funny because the whole arguing just shuts down communication. And it immediately puts up a wall. So when you argue, basically what you're doing is saying, like you're invalidating anything you have to say. Because a lot of times when someone is saying that all religions are the same, there's something else involved. It's not just logic. And I put an quote on your outline from the Bible that just, I've been reading this passage several times. I keep coming back to it in my own personal life, and I wanted to share it with you. And what Paul said here is that the message of the cross is foolish to those who are headed for destruction. But we who are being saved know it is the very power of God. As the scriptures say, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and discard the intelligence of the intelligent. So there's this picture, the message of the cross is foolish to those who don't believe it. And I think about like a magic eye picture. I know I'm dating myself here. Those are pretty old. But I could never see them. You know those things where you're supposed to see a picture? I think I have one in the, but I'm not sure. Yeah, there you go. So these things that you're supposed to focus on and you can see a picture, I could never see them. And people would tell me, oh, you just have to cross your eyes or like relax your eyes or hyper-focus your eyes, put it close to your face, put it far, and I could never see it. And the one time I thought I saw it, I think I looked in the back of the book where it had the answers, and it was like imaginary. I wish that I saw it. I wish that I got it. But sometimes you don't get it until you get it, if that makes sense. And so arguing is just, it's not helpful to the conversation. It doesn't actually progress the conversation. So instead of arguing about whether religions are the same or not, my approach is usually to let Jesus speak for himself. That's the next point on your outline, is let Jesus speak for himself. And I want to look at a passage from John 10 today where Jesus makes some very strong declaring statements about who he is. Now, this passage is actually, he's speaking to a group of Jewish people, and he's speaking around the time of Hanukkah. Now, I don't know about you, but I was so sad to learn that Adam Sandler steered me astray in his song that it's not the Festival of Lights. I was so bummed about that. But Hanukkah actually means dedication. And what they're celebrating at Hanukkah is there was a period of time where the Jewish temple was actually completely desecrated by Antiochus IV. His name is Antiochus. I mean, if your name starts with anti, it's like you're the bad guy, right? So it was completely demolished. They were sacrificing pigs, which are an unclean animal in the Jewish religion, on the altar. So it was like completely desecrated. And these Jewish people rose up and overthrew the people who were in the temple and rededicated the temple to the Lord. And what they're celebrating at Hanukkah is that there was a miracle, that there was only a little bit of oil left that was still sacred. And that oil, it took 8 days to make more. That 1 day's worth of oil lasted 8 days. So they celebrate it as a miracle. But around this time, they're celebrating the rededication of the temple. Now keep that in mind, because I'm going to come back to that in a little bit. But what Jesus says in this context, speaking to a Jewish audience, it's on your outline if you wanted to follow along. I am the gate. Anyone who goes through me will be cared for, will freely go in and out and find pasture. A thief is only there to steal and kill and destroy. I came so that they can have real and eternal life, more and better life than they ever dreamed of. Now, one of the things you notice here when Jesus says, I am the gate. Last week, Edward talked through how Jesus said, I am the bread of life. So as you hear this, I am the gate. The gate is such a clear picture. If you think about a gate just in your life, a gate is usually in a fence or in a wall. It's in something where there is in and there's an out. And what it means that there is the gate, he didn't say a gate, he said, I am the gate, that there's one way, that there's only one gate that goes in and out into this pasture. And there's something that you don't notice in English, and this is where I get so excited that I went to seminary and I learned Greek and Hebrew, because I just can geek out for hours on it. But one of the things you don't notice in this passage is that he's saying two things. One is the gate, meaning there's only one of them. And then on the other side, he's saying, I am. And there's a couple different ways that you can say I am in Greek. The first way, you guys can say it with me, or repeat after me. You can say it with me if you're as geeky as I am, is Amy. Can you say that? Amy? Think of someone named Amy. Amy. And what that means is I am. Like if I say I am on staff here, I am Francis, it just means I am. But when I say ego Amy, can you guys say ego Amy? Now think of Amy eating waffles for a picture. It means I am, and it's very emphatic. And what Jesus is saying here is he's reminding his Jewish audience of the time that Moses was speaking to God in the burning bush, and he said, I am. And this would not have been lost on his audience. So he's not saying, I'm the gate. He's saying, I am God, and I am the gate. And this is significant because you've heard these things that people say about Jesus, like Jesus is a good teacher, he's a good philosopher, he's somebody that we should behave like because he's loving and compassionate. But what he's saying here is he's making a strong statement that he is God and that he is the gate. So with this part on your outline, it says the gate equals the only way. And there's, if you want to look and do some, this isn't the only time he said it. If you look in John 14, a couple chapters later, he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father except through me. So there's this exclusivity that there's one way. So then I'm going to continue what Jesus said. He said, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd puts the sheep before himself, sacrifices himself if necessary. I want you guys to take note of that. A hired man is not a real shepherd. The sheep mean nothing to him. He sees a wolf come and runs for it, leaving the sheep to be ravaged and scattered by the wolf. He's only in it for the money. The sheep don't matter to him. I am the good shepherd. I know my own sheep, and my own sheep know me. In the same way, the Father knows me, and I know the Father. I put the sheep before myself, sacrificing myself if necessary. Now take note, I said if necessary there, because I chose intentionally to use the Message, which is a paraphrase. And so that means that what the author Eugene Peterson did is he took the Bible and he tried to make it in words that you'd understand. But he got it completely wrong in a couple places. And so that's why I wanted to point it out to you. Because when he says, I sacrifice myself if necessary, that fits for the metaphor of a shepherd, but it's not actually what it says in the Bible. It says sacrificing myself, period. It's not if necessary, because it wasn't like Jesus was thinking, okay, that's my plan B. Just in case I need to do this, I'm going to do this. And so when he said it, he didn't say if necessary, and it weakens what. And so overall, I mean, this passage, I chose it because of how easy it is to understand. But I want you to do something that Paul and Dwayne never ask you to do, and cross out if necessary in both of those places on your outline. Because it actually doesn't help what Jesus is saying. It doesn't translate well what he's trying to communicate. And that is that the good shepherd sacrifices himself. And so I told you a little bit about the context. And you're probably wondering, why is Francis telling me about the context? Well, because to a Jewish audience, at Hanukkah, what they would do is they would think about this Old Testament passage in Ezekiel. And in Ezekiel 34, if you guys who are family group leaders, write that down. You can discuss this if you're discussing the messages. In Ezekiel 34, God is so beyond angry. And he's so beyond angry because he is saying to the leaders of Israel, you guys who are supposed to be shepherds are bad shepherds. And what happened was you guys were drinking the sheep's milk, which is kind of gross. You were using their wool. You were roasting their lambs. You were doing everything, but you weren't feeding my sheep. You weren't taking care of my sheep. You aren't tending to my sheep. You're letting them get scattered. You're letting them go in every direction because you don't love my sheep. And what he says is he said, you guys are fired. and I will be like a shepherd to my sheep. I will come to them and I will bring them into their pasture. I will seek them out. I will find all of those sheep and bring them back. And so there's this picture in their head. At Hanukkah, the priests would consider their own shepherding in light of what God said in Ezekiel 34. And they'd weigh their own ability to care for the flock by that. And so when Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, he's bringing this picture that would have been fresh in their mind. And it would have brought back God saying, you guys are not good shepherds. And it would have been this obvious comparison. Now, on your outline, if you're taking notes, you guys will like this because I went to seminary for 6 years to get this kind of insight. The good shepherd equals not bad shepherds. You guys like that? I'll say that again. The good shepherd equals not bad shepherds. Now, the good shepherd, what he's saying is, I recognize that these religious leaders are like the hired hand. Some of these bad shepherds are in it for the money. They don't care for my sheep. They don't care about my people. They hurt them. They judge them. They throw them away. And what Jesus is saying is, I hear that, and I am the good shepherd. So that same picture of God saying, you guys are all fired and I will be like a shepherd. Jesus is saying, I am the good shepherd. And the truth is, when I spend time with people who say that all religions are the same, a lot of times they actually, there's a story there. And so this isn't on your outline, but I also want to encourage you to listen. Because you'll be surprised sometimes what you hear when you talk to people who say something like that. In fact, a couple years ago, I was at a barbecue at one of my close friend's house, and she said, oh, you're going to meet this couple, and I think you'll really hit it off. And it turns out I really did hit it off, but she told me in advance, he's totally against church. And at the time, I was in seminary, so she was telling me, I think, to warn me, you know, in case it came up, what do you do, that I'd have to say, you know, I'm in seminary. And so I met them, and we did hit it off. They were awesome. And as I was talking to him, he said, what do you do? And I said, oh, I'm in seminary. And no, I told him I was in seminary. I was working towards my master's of divinity. And he said, oh, my mom's a pastor. And my ears perked up like, oh, really? And it just occurred to me that so many people I know who think all religions are the same in the way that it was in the Family Guy clip, that they're all bad. There's a story there. And I think about how I know people who grew up in the church but felt like their questions were never effectively answered when they had real questions about life or faith or how do these things fit. And they didn't get the answers, so they felt like, well, throw it all away. Or people who sometimes grew up in the church and then their life choices that they made weren't towing the party line, so then they were judged and they were condemned. And they were finally kicked out, or they left because it was too painful to stay. And I even think about how there are several children of pastors and missionaries who leave the church because they don't know what it feels like for their parents to love them more than ministry. And so there's often a story there, and it's something that's worth listening to. And so when Jesus is saying, I am the good shepherd, he is responding to what people have questions about. So there is, the gate says there's only one way, but the good shepherd says that it's a good way. So when Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, he is saying that it's a good way. Now the challenge with this whole topic of religions not being the same is that it's not fair. Ultimately, it's not fair. If there's a gate, then there's an in and there's an out, and it's not fair because there are people on the outside. And I want you to hear what Jesus says next in this passage. He says, you need to know that I have other sheep in addition to those in this pen. I need to gather and bring them too. They'll also recognize my voice. Then it will be one flock, one shepherd. When I hear this passage, Jesus is saying that he's talking to a Jewish audience, and you were born into that religion. And he's saying, there are people who are not Jewish that I care about, that I am calling to me. And I love this picture because the shepherd is a rich picture in the Bible. I think that he is calling to his sheep. I think of the picture in Luke 15, where Jesus tells the story of a shepherd who has 100 sheep and 99 are safe. And what does he do with the one? He lets it alone because he says it was a bad sheep anyway. Sorry, I had to do that for Paul, in memory of Paul. No, he goes after the one sheep. I don't even know how he could tell that he had one sheep missing with 100. But he goes after that sheep. And I picture the shepherd just crawling over rocks and searching the valley and calling the sheep by name, looking for this sheep because this one sheep mattered. And I think of another picture in the Bible where it talks about God being a shepherd in Psalm 23, which is one of the most famous psalms. It starts, "The Lord is my shepherd." And in the last verse, one of the last lines says, "Surely your goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life." Now, this is why I geek out about Hebrew, because you don't see the picture in English. The word goodness and mercy. Mercy is this word that is untranslatable into English. It is God's devoted, unfailing, loyal, pursue you to the ends of the earth love. And follow doesn't mean like a little puppy chasing after you, nipping at your heels. Follow, that word, the way that it's used, is like the Terminator. You know what I'm talking about? The picture of this relentless pursuit that God's goodness and his unfailing, just absolutely loyal love is following us relentlessly the way the Terminator would, knocking on doors, driving cars through walls, and it's awesome. But that's what this picture looks like, the good shepherd. So the good shepherd isn't just letting go of sheep that aren't in the pasture. He is relentlessly pursuing them. He is calling their name. He knows them by name, this passage says. Now, one of the things just with the It's Not Fair challenge, I think about this song that I really enjoy. And the line in the song, if you're taking notes, says, "The beauty of grace is that it makes life not fair." Ultimately, grace, what Jesus did on the cross in his life, death, and resurrection to make a way for us to bridge the gap back to God that we couldn't have done on our own through our works or through those other things, it's not fair. I think about it like when I play Monopoly and you get one of those chance cards that's a bank error in your favor, and you get, I don't know, Monopoly's pretty old, so it's like 10 bucks. But it's this completely undeserved thing. It's not fair, but it's not fair against people. It's fair for them in a way that is good. None of us deserve to be forgiven by God. None of us deserve to be pursued by him through our own works. In fact, there's this great picture in the same passage, Jesus continues, of why life isn't fair. You need to, this is why the Father loves me, because I freely lay down my life. And so I am free to take it up again. No one takes it from me. I lay it down of my own free will. I have the right to lay it down. I also have the right to take it up again. I receive this authority personally from my Father. It's not fair that Jesus chose to die on our behalf. That God stepped down out of heaven, that he made himself a human being, and he called us by name. It's not fair, but it was something that he chose to do. And when this passage says, I freely lay down my life, it's not that Jesus was a martyr. Like I said, this wasn't plan B. This wasn't something that he got duped into doing. Like they fooled him into getting up on the cross. But it was something that he chose to do. And it's not fair, but it's good. And the last thing I wanted to point out, again, this passage in 1 Corinthians 1, if you want to read something in your time, in your own quiet time, if you're thinking through, well, how do I share with people who believe that all religions are the same? This passage just has really spoken to me in the past few weeks. It says, the foolish plan of God is wiser than the wisest of human plans. And God's weakness is stronger than the greatest of human strength. Remember, dear brothers and sisters, that few of you were wise in the world's eyes or powerful or wealthy when God called you. Instead, God chose things the world considers foolish in order to shame those who think they are wise. And he chose things that are powerless to shame those who are powerful. Now, when I was in that hospital room last week, there were several people in and out all the time. And I had this one opportunity on Sunday morning where I was alone in the room. And I actually read this passage because I was foolishly trying to squeeze in some extra message prep time and just to get my mind off of what was going on. And it struck me in a new way. I realized that Marie, in her weakness, was laying in this unconscious state. And all of us who were young and healthy, our lives stopped to be with her. And one of, well, my best friend that called me has a twin sister who's also one of my best friends. And she's in nursing school. She left nursing school to come and be with her mom. And for all that she knew about medications and the things that she's learning in school, she couldn't save her mom. And it occurred to me that so many times we depend on our power or our wisdom in order to say the right thing or to be the right person. And God's saying through his word that my ways are higher than your ways. My foolish plan of sending my son to die for you, yeah, it seems foolish when you think about it logically, but that's my wise plan to save you. So today we're going to actually celebrate communion together as a way of celebrating God's foolish plan of sending his son to live a perfect, sinless life, to live and die, and most importantly, to be resurrected on our behalf, to resurrect so that we might have this life. And if you are someone who is a Christian, you've put your faith in Christ, this is just a way for us to celebrate and remember that this foolish plan is a bank error in our favor. It's not fair, but it's good. And that Jesus is the only way. And maybe, just maybe, I like to think that if you're here today and you haven't got this faith thing figured out, I like to think that you're here because you've been hearing the Good Shepherd calling your name. That you've been hearing his voice and you're not sure how to respond to it or whether you want to. Today, as we take communion, maybe taking communion with us can be the first time of you saying, I am responding to the Good Shepherd's voice. When we take communion, we remember on the night that Jesus was betrayed, he broke bread and he said, this is my body broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And then he poured out wine and he held the cup and he said, this is my blood shed for you. Do this in remembrance of me. So if you are in a place where you celebrate that God's foolish plan brought us back to him, brought us back into his flock, back into the good pasture, back into the life that is more than we could have ever asked or imagined, celebrate with us. And if you want to respond today for the first time and say, I hear your voice, Jesus. I hear that you are the only way and that it is a good way. Please take communion with us as just admitting that you can't do it on your own. In spite of trying to do it on your own, that you recognize, Jesus, you are the only way back into the Father. You are the gate. You are the only way, and it is a good way. And we're going to take communion now, and feel free to take it as soon as you receive the elements. If you want to take a moment and pray or reflect, please do so. But I'm not going to come back up here, and we're all going to take it at once. So feel free to take it in your own timing. The band's going to play now. Not Kermit, me. I just have one quick announcement. Now, Dwayne talked a little bit about the women's seat, but you know what? He's not a woman, so he doesn't understand. And I don't fault him for that. We can't all be amazing. But I just want to encourage you that if you are a woman, please sign up for the women's tea and sign up for a couple spots. Plan to bring somebody with you, because the bottom line is it is a wonderful event. We have a speaker. We do raffle prizes, which are lots and lots of fun. We're going to do a makeover this year for someone, because the theme is when life hands you lemons. And we're going to do a makeover for someone who's had a lot of lemons handed to them this year. So we are going to do a lot of great things. It's just a great time to invite your friends and hang out with a bunch of chicks and talk and do things that girls like to do. But it is a lot of fun, and I anticipate fully that we will sell out. So if you're thinking about doing it, I just encourage you. It's $5. Sign up. And it's on Mother's Day weekend, guys. So if you have a wife or a mother or a sister who's a mom, this is a great gift. And even better, it's only $5. And extra bonus, you get them out of the house so you can have time to do whatever you want to do. So I just want to encourage you, sign up on your way out. And we're going to have our blessing now, and we raise our hands, but this isn't like anything magical or anything. This is just a symbol of us reaching out in response to Jesus. So if you feel comfortable, raise your hand. May the God who is the only way and who is the good shepherd speak loudly, and may your heart respond in obedience to him. And may you have bold, confident words to speak to someone who's struggling with the idea that all religions are the same. And may you rely on the power of God and the power of his voice to draw them close to him. I pray these things in the name of Jesus. Amen. Have a great week, everybody.